It is the Doomsday Podcast, and Matt Mosley alongside Ed Werder, and we come to you, and it's after a rare Cowboys win. Cowboys find a way to win this one 30-7. We'll talk more about that, but Ed Werder, our intrepid co-host of the Doomsday Podcast and an important member of ESPN, was sent to because of the Cowboys-Bengals game, sadly, was not nationally thought to be one of the more attractive matchups. Ed was sent to a more attractive matchup in Las Vegas, where Ed was able to witness in person a, Phillip Rivers and the Colts against the Raiders. And Ed, if you would, real quick, tell us, give us your impressions. You're there on the strip. You've taken some time. You stepped out of the casino. Give us a little bit of taste of this new stadium. How did it compare? You've now seen a couple of new stadiums this season.
Yeah, there are two new stadiums in the NFL, and I saw SoFi in Los Angeles week one when the Cowboys opened that stadium, and then today Allegiant Stadium. Right off the Las Vegas Strip, literally right across the highway from the Mandalay Bay complex. So obviously in the pandemic, it's an odd situation to have these great, brand new, beautiful venues and no fans at the games. It's really, you know, very unfortunate, and I'm sure the experience is much different in both locations under those circumstances described than they would be if it not for the pandemic situation in our country and really in the world right now. So that's disappointing. And it's a little weird that you sit in the press box, you know, high above the field, and, you know, the game just sort of happens. It just, there's no buildup to it. It's all of a sudden they start playing. And it's very strange to witness this. And the other thing, because of the Doomsday Podcast, I feel a real obligation to make sure I see the Cowboys game live. And so there have been having 2 weekends where I wasn't either assigned the Cowboys game or I wasn't off so I could just watch it. And so in both cases, one time in Denver and one and today, I had to reach out to the PR people for the home team to make sure they could allow me to get the game in the press box before the kickoff of the game I was covering actually began. So they've been very accommodating in that regard. And the pain and suffering I go through to make sure that before I work, I can watch the Bengals and the Cowboys, I think it's quite a testament to my resolve and commitment to the Doomsday Podcast.
I just wanted to see if this was the day the Cowboys could kind of turn it around. And maybe they could cause some issues with Gio Bernard and Travion Williams and some of those players. So we appreciate that. Now, Ed, real quick, can you give me, though, I get what you're saying, the atmosphere and all of that, the architectural, give me your sort of architectural, you know, you walk up to SoFi, it has to be enormous. I would think that there in Vegas, it has to have a little bit of that feel, maybe even that you had in Glendale. I remember thinking, oh my gosh, this looks like a spaceship or something has landed here. Which one, to your eye, was more impressive? From the outside, and then give me your inside thought.
Yeah, SoFi interior. Stadium to me was more architectural eye candy, as I called it. You know, it's kind of an open venue that really the field is just covered with a canopy. It's not fully enclosed and can't be because they have the kind of weather that allows for that. So I would say that just in terms of looking at it visually, more stunning is the Rams home field. And I guess now where the Chargers are playing as well. But here it's a big black edifice. It's not beautiful from the outside, but both stadiums are beautiful inside. I mean, the playing surface, and this I've really been struck by how gorgeous the Rams stadium and the field looks on television. It's really beautiful. And I think what they have here with the Raiders is very similar in that regard. And I have not been able to go to this strip. I will play a little blackjack now and then, especially if I'm on a golf junket. but I have not made it to the Strip, so I can't tell you what the casinos and so forth look like at this time. But it is really odd to be in these gorgeous stadiums, completely empty. I can't imagine the challenge financially for the respective owners, you know, Stan Kroenke with the Rams and Mark Davis, who isn't even coming to – Mark Davis is not coming to the Raider home games because he's boycotting, saying, until fans can be there, I'm not going either. Like, my fans are not allowed, so I'm going to deprive myself as well. But he really didn't miss a whole lot today because the Colts scored 44 points, the most they've had under Frank Reich, their head coach. And, oh, by the way, need I mention, since we're doing the Cowboys podcast, the Doomsday podcast, Matt Eberflus, former Cowboys de facto defensive coordinator in recent years under Rod Marinelli, now in his third season with the Colts. Colts going to make the playoffs in all likelihood, and a lot of it's because of the defense. They had a pick six today. Under Matt Eberflus, the Colts lead the NFL with four pick sixes this year.
Boy, I tell you, Eberflus, a big Werder was early to that party, the Eberflus, and then all of a sudden he was gone. He was thought he was going to be under one coach, but ends up under another, and that thing has worked out nicely. And the Cowboys lose another great coach. The talent continues to leave. Jerry doesn't recognize their great coaching. We've seen it happen time and time again. It is the Doomsday Podcast. Chris Gross, Frito Nation Productions. Please play the music. It is the Doomsday Podcast. Ed Werder coming to us live from Las Vegas. And Ed will be leaving Las Vegas, in fact, some point tomorrow morning, coming back to us. But he, sadly, even though he does do a great job covering the Cowboys, this game, the 3-9 Cowboys against the 2-9-1 or whatever they were, Bengals, it was just not quite attractive enough, as I stated. But Ed had his eye on the game. And Ed, sadly, even though I sort of had this thought that, it would be like the Cowboys to at least threaten to get back in the playoff race and reel off four wins. And perhaps as I sort of, I was joking about last week, I thought, what if it happened? What if the Giants and Redskins lost and they were actually just a game back after today or a game and a half because of the Redskins? But Ed, the Washington football team has rallied under this, their backup quarterback, who we thought would never play football again. He's back at the helm. They beat the 49ers, the Cowboys' next opponent. And Ed, we basically have to admit, before we get into this Cowboys effort, the Cowboys win, as far as any kind of playoff hopes, didn't really do anything for them.
Well, it left them, barely in contention mathematically. The reality is they're two games out of first place in the NFC East, with the easiest remaining schedule among the four teams, but also they're 1-3 in the division, and that's the worst record of any of the NFC East teams. And since Washington swept Dallas, they have a two-game lead and a tiebreaker advantage. So Dallas now has to win out, and Washington has to lose each of its last three games for the Cowboys to make the playoffs. And we all know how unlikely that is, and to personalize how unlikely that is, at one point after the Cowboys won, I was told I was covering the Cowboys 49ers game next weekend, the one that was supposed to be a primetime game but flexed to the undesirable noon kickoff reserved for only bad non-contending football teams, although Jerry didn't see it that way, and we're going to hear that and talk about some of his comments on the radio a little bit later in our program here. But so I was assigned that game. And then once Washington won, I was told, forget it, we're not covering the Cowboys and 49ers anymore. You're going back to Arizona, where I think I'll be covering my fourth Cardinals game. We're going to cover the Cardinals and the Eagles. Jalen Hurts, second NFL start after his stunning victory today over the New Orleans Saints. And you talk about coaching talent that got away. Sean Payton is number one on that list. for the Cowboys and his team losing today to the Eagles. The NFC East team's actually this laughing stock of a division, the worst division in the history of the NFL. They actually went 3-1 today. And the team that lost was the team that everybody thought was suddenly going to win the division, the New York Giants, under another coach who left the Cowboys, and Jason Garrett running that offense, which it didn't run too well today with Daniel Jones in there. He was at his absolute worst today. A lot of sacks, a lot of turnovers. So Washington takes command of the division, and the Cowboys have virtually no hope of making the playoffs. And quite honestly, that's exactly what they deserve.
Ed, if I were you, as much as they're sending you west, I would just go hole up in your beloved Colorado in that vacation home of yours, and I would just set up shop there for the rest of the season. You have no business being here in the greater Dallas-Fort Worth area.
Yeah, well, we are planning to be there for Christmas, and so now I've got to figure out a way to get from Phoenix, because I did think I was going to cover that Dallas game and just, you know, go the next morning to Colorado with my family, but now it's like I got to get home from Phoenix somehow after that game on Sunday night to make the flight we have planned for Christmas. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, I obviously, being the reporter located furthest west has caused me to travel quite a bit this year. I think I've been to L.A. once, Seattle twice, like Arizona, I think, said this will be my fourth time. Now I'm in Vegas. So, yeah, very odd season. And certainly the Cowboys' failure has played a huge role in that. And I'm not complaining because Mike McCarthy and everybody who wears a star on their helmet has a lot more to be feeling bad about than I do.
Yeah, you're not one to complain. It is the Doomsday Podcast.
Hardly ever.
Mosley and Werder with you, Frito Nation Productions. Ed, let's talk about the game, though. As we've shared the bad news that it does look like the Cowboys would take obviously a miracle for them to get involved in any kind of playoff talk. So, but we can talk about the game today. And Ed, I don't know if they had the sound up there. I know you can only ask for so much. They had the game on. They can't exactly probably turn the sound up for you. But I really thought that was kind of cool that they Andy Dalton returning to a place where he played 9 years and had some really good moments with them. In fact, went to 4 Pro Bowls, believe it or not. And when they announced the they announced, you know, them running onto the field, the Cowboys, they said the visiting Cowboys, and they said Andy Dalton and the Dallas Cowboys. And, you know, for a pretty pitiful franchise, I kind of like that. I kind of like the way they handled that.
Yeah, I mean, it was obviously a very important personal game for Andy Dalton to go back. As a Cowboys starter, you know, he led that franchise for almost a full decade as a starting quarterback and was sort of unceremoniously let go. They drafted Joe Burrow with the number one overall pick, and they didn't want Andy Dalton to be there to start the season and help groom this, you know, young LSU quarterback. And so he became the immediate starter, even under the difficult circumstances of taking over team day one for any rookie quarterback, much less one that, you know, didn't have any preseason games and had the offseason truncated like everybody did. But yeah, it was great that you know, Mike McCarthy made a big point of, hey, I named him one of the captains, and I had him break down the team, you know, on the field right before the kickoff, and gave him a game ball, and they drenched him in, you know, Gatorade and water after the game like he had won something, you know, magnificent. And it actually got to the point, as I listened to Mike McCarthy after the game, where it was kind of a little embarrassing. You know, that this is a franchise that used to celebrate Super Bowl wins on a semi-regular basis, and now their greatest accomplishment is they won a game for their backup quarterback, you know, playing against his former team in Cincinnati. I mean, that was kind of sad. And then in terms of the bigger picture, you know, keep in mind that the Cowboys, when this game started, had the number 4 overall draft pick, and Cincinnati had the number 3 overall draft pick. And I'll just say this, having watched the way these two teams played this game, you should never think that you can show up in Cincinnati late in the season and teach the Bengals something about football incompetence. This has been their area of expertise for decades. They know how to fail in these late games when high draft picks are at stake. That's how they got Joe Burrow first overall last spring. And they don't always make it seem quite so obvious as they did in this particular game. But, man, how different the Cowboys' season might have been if only they could play the hapless Bengals every week. The Bengals lost three fumbles in their first 23 offensive snaps against a team that's among the very worst in the league in taking the football away. In fact, only the Texans had created fewer turnovers than the Cowboys. And the Bengals are the first team to lose a fumble on each of their first three possessions since the 2013 Patriots. That's how bad the Bengals want to keep that number three draft pick or possibly move up higher. And pretty soon, that's really all the Cowboys are going to have to play for, too.
I like that. It's almost impossible to outflank the Bengals when it comes to futility, and the Cowboys were unable to do so. And then when that thing going away, I had to laugh. You know, every once in a while, Ed, you can sort of tell, like one of those halftime shows or pregame, you can kind of tell if the guys maybe haven't been paying attention to a couple of bad teams, because Tony Gonzalez, he's asked to kind of break down the Cowboys-Bengals game, and he said, whatever. And he said, look, Cowboys got made, you know, forced these turnovers. And then he makes a statement. He goes, and really, he says, Brandon Allen just looks lost out there. And I thought to myself, Brandon Allen is like the best thing they have going. Like he was at the time like 11 for 13 for 110 yards. I'm like, what has Brandon Allen done wrong?
Well, I mean, it appeared to me, and again, I wasn't at the game, I saw it on TV, it appeared to me that the Bengals committed the dreaded butt fumble for their second turnover of the game. And so it was amazing to me that the Cowboys, you know, they came into they scored 17 points off those three turnovers. And this was a team that had only scored 28 points off turnovers in their previous 12 games. So they had been badly out. They were the worst turnover margin, you know, the team that had been outscored by the biggest margin off turnovers in the entire league. And they start out with a 17-0 lead because the Bengals turned the ball over on three consecutive possessions. So pretty remarkable. I will say that I thought it was, we talked about the significance of the moment to Andy Dalton, and great for him. I think he's a really good guy, and you know, people really respect him. And I think he's been every bit the player that they thought that he was going to be as their backup quarterback to Dak Prescott. I think he's fully capable of being a number two anywhere in the league. But the other guy was Aldon Smith, recovering that fumble, running 78 yards for his first touchdown in the NFL. And it was the first fumble recovery for him since the 2014 NFC Championship game when he was playing for the 49ers against the Seahawks. That's how long it has been for Aldon Smith since he's made that a play of that magnitude.
Wow, Ed, six years. That is remarkable, and obviously a well-chronicled story. He's been away from the game for various reasons, and it is good to see. I know he's been sober now for, I guess, going on, Ed, 11, maybe on, close to a year now. And so I know we both talked to his agent a lot in the off season, and I'm not saying he's just gone crazy this year, but he certainly, that had to be a huge moment for him and in his comeback from everything he'd gone through. All right. Cowboys, you know, obviously this thing got away, and they tried to, Cincinnati tried to get back in. But Ed, to put this in perspective, I mean, the you've talked about all year that the Cowboys are horrific at like scoring off of turnovers, and they barely ever do it and all of that kind of thing. It almost looked like they were going to score on their first drive, a touchdown, something they haven't done all season. It's something they hold with, like, I think the Broncos, maybe one other really horrible team, perhaps Cincinnati. They have not scored a touchdown on their first drive all season. That continued. The Cowboys were not able to score a touchdown. But, Ed, I mean, to score 17 points off three turnovers they caused, that was remarkable stuff, even against the hapless Bengals, considering where the Cowboys had been.
Well, this is only the second time in, you know, the last two decades that the Cowboys have gotten a takeaway on each of their first three defensive possessions. The last time it happened was 2013 against the Giants, when they had two interceptions and a fumble recovery on the Giants' first three possessions. So that was Eli Manning, I guess. Mm-hmm. But yeah, pretty impressive that this comes obviously in a week after which Mike McCarthy he basically said they quit last week. You know, we remember we talked about it, the easy money touchdown at the end of the game, that there were too many guys who, once again, just like in the Cleveland game, could easily be accused of not giving full effort. And Mike McCarthy said he brought that subject up this week to this team. And I thought we actually did see a lot of hustle plays out of the Cowboys defense. I mean, I remember seeing DeMarcus Lawrence. I was watching him. I remember seeing Aldon Smith beyond the fumble recovery and the 78-yard run. He was chasing plays down. So I think there was just a greater commitment to playing hard. Now, it's kind of ridiculous to me that they don't play hard all the time, but we know what Xavier Woods said after that Cleveland game. You know, 73 plays. You can't expect me to play hard on, you know, every play I'm on the field. It's the NFL. It's not realistic. First of all, yeah, I do. And secondly, if you're not going to, don't be stupid and suggest that it's unrealistic to expect that from NFL players, because I think that is the expectation for NFL players. Effort should never be an option. Effort should never vary. It should always be there. It's a constant. And it hasn't been for this team, but it was today, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think it, and it tells you how bad this Cowboys season has been, that no discussion about the Cowboys has anything to do with the actual games that they're being played that day. They went to the Fox halftime show, and it was literally all about, okay, what's Andy Dalton going to do in the future, and what's Dak Prescott, and do you think he'll be the guy? And do you think they'll re-sign him at all? Like, they've already, literally everybody's already moved on. This team has, I mean, this is what Mike McCarthy's calling the fourth quarter of the season. And they're in the fourth quarter of the season. And it just, because of what happened today, and really because of their pitiful play all season, it just, you know, that doesn't matter. This off season is, of course, what's going to matter. And before we move on to that, and of course, after we talk to Stretch, Glenn Stretch Smith, former Cowboys coach and scout, we will hear from Jerry Jones, who had some interesting comments this week on his radio show. Anything, Ed, that you wanted to add? We talked a little bit about, I mean, I thought Schultz played well. I thought the offensive line kept, I thought they kept Dalton upright for most of the day. I found it interesting, and I wanted to see what you thought about this. I listened to McCarthy as well. Thanks to you. You kind of had to help me a little bit. But I thought that was interesting when McCarthy started talking about Pollard. Not just that the guys had some great returns and he had another one today. His running ability. I almost get the sense, and I'm not trying to read too much in between the lines here, but Ed, I mean, obviously Zeke had the one long carry today that made up almost like half of the yards he ended up with. He had like 49 yards on the day rushing, certainly 100-yard game all season. Do you ever get the feeling that McCarthy and maybe some people in this organization are almost as enamored, if not more enamored, with Pollard than they are with Zeke, the highest paid or running back in the NFL?
Well, one of the concerns that I talked a lot about on TV and on our shows when they hired Mike McCarthy was how compatible is his offensive style and his play calling with Ezekiel Elliott, who had the most carries in the entire NFL through the first four seasons, you know, his first four seasons in the league. And the Cowboys have made a huge investment in him. They spent the fourth pick in the draft on him. And they spent $90 million guaranteed dollars on him a year ago. And he's got one 100-yard rushing game in 13 games under Mike McCarthy. His average yardage per game has gone down every year to a new low now. I mean, he's always ranked in the top five, and now he's barely in the top 15. And that was before he had 50-some yards today. So, you know, Mike McCarthy's been nothing but he's praised Zeke in terms of how he describes him, how much he respect he has for him, how he handles himself, how he prepares and studies and competes and all that stuff. But it just doesn't seem like he fits the system as well as a guy like Tony Pollard does. You know, I mean, you know, Mike McCarthy, for all his years in Green Bay, I mentioned just a minute ago that Zeke had the most carries in the NFL for the duration of time he'd been in the league coming into this season. Well, Mike McCarthy has never had a running back rank in the top 10 in carries in his 13 years in the NFL as a head coach. And so that created a lot of questions for me about how does Jerry Jones go out and make this investment in Ezekiel Elliott and then hire a coach who doesn't value that? You know, that doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't make any more sense than going out in a pandemic year and hiring a defensive coordinator who's going to change you from a 4-3 to a 3-4 via Skype and Zoom. You know, it doesn't make sense. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Ezekiel Elliott here. I don't think they're in a position where they can really do anything with him because of the salary cap hit. Especially when who knows what, you know, Dak Prescott's going to cost, assuming of course that they sign him, because losing creates more options for quarterbacks in the draft. So where this all goes, I don't know, but I'm not convinced that Zeke Elliott is ever going to have the role under Mike McCarthy that he's used to having under Jason Garrett.
Yeah, it is really going to be interesting. He's not probably going to get thrown overboard, but somebody will, and we'll have a lot of time to talk about that. I like when you say via Skype. For some reason, I could really hear, I could listen to you say that all evening. It is the Doomsday Podcast, and Ed, something we're going to talk to Stretch about. And by the way, that thing you said about Jerry, what Mike Nolan tried to do, Jerry's going to comment on that. We'll hear from him after we talk to Stretch. But Ed, that was interesting, wasn't it? As you were watching from Vegas, to kind of look out there and see. You know, they said Deontay Burton for the Cowboys, and they were saying all these guys. I mean, these guys are just like straight off the practice squad. Like, there's, and it's like, hey, get out there and like play about 40 plays or something. I mean, yep. 33.
Savion Smith and Rashard Robinson and Chris Westry. Yes. These guys are all playing defensive back at the end of the game.
I don't know. I think Westry, if I recall correctly, is the real tall guy.
Yes.
I think he's like a 6'3 corner or something. But
weighs about 150 pounds. It's an exaggeration. I tend to exaggerate at times.
That's okay. But
only for
28, Rashard, my wife was watching the game, commented that he looked skinny himself. They have a lot of skinny cornerbacks these days. The skinniest player they ever had was that safety. You remember the 6'5 safety they had out of Florida State a few years ago? Remember, he was always he couldn't figure out how to tackle correctly. He was always tackling. He had really poor form. His name, if I thought hard enough, is Patrick somebody.
But I can't remember it either. Maybe after you go to break and talk to Stretch, you'll come up with it.
Okay, all right, we can do that. It is that time to get ready to talk to Glenn. To Stretch, I did want to say, Ed, while I have you, before we go to Stretch, where are you going to go to have your Miller Lights tonight? They're in Vegas. I mean, there's so many options, and you know, there's just so many wonderful places. Do you have something in mind? The Venetian, MGM, Wynn. There's something called Wynn, I think, that's a big thing.
Yeah, I almost stayed at the Wynn. I was very interested in the Wynn. Their rates were ridiculous. You know, there's a lot of the casinos are open all week long, but some of the hotels here are only open on the weekends now, Friday, Saturday, Sunday nights.
Oh, wow. Wow. I would not recommend Circus Circus. We did that a few years ago. That's like more for kids. I say that. I was like, we were newlyweds. All right, Ed, that will be fascinating to find out where you end up. I bring it up because 60 years we're celebrating Miller Lite being a part of the Cowboys, the original light beer. It is Miller time. And Ed Werder covered a man. He's covered a lot of people who enjoyed Miller Lite. I'm trying to remember, I think Jimmy dabbled in it. We won't say exactly what, because it would take us off task to say what Jimmy, now that I think about it, with his chips and hot sauce, I think Jimmy went a different direction. But Troy Aikman and many others, obviously, and the Cowboys were huge with Miller Lite. It's Miller time in Cowboys Nation as everybody gathers to watch these games. And really, you can't watch the Cowboys this season, Ed, without a Miller Lite in hand. It's really impossible. I did want to mention the Miller Lite and the Cowboys are producing those new holiday, that knitwear that Chris Gross loves so much, sweaters, hats, and socks, with proceeds donated to the Salvation Army. In fact, I'm going to send some over to Frito as he gets ready to go home after a tough, long stretch of physical therapy and medical issues. He's gonna head home, and we're gonna send him some knitwear from Miller Lite. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 96 calories and 3.2 carbs per 12 ounces. This holiday season, Miller Lite will celebrate those unique occasions with the Cowboys. Get out there and have a Miller Lite. Now it is time for Stretch Marks, where Glenn Stretch Smith, former Cowboys coach and scout, gives his take on how the game went. He's been known to be harsh. And as we begin tonight's session, of course, you can catch him on TV on Sunday evenings at 10:30 on Dell Hansen Sports Special. But Stretch, we're getting ready, of course, usually joined by Ed Werder. He's out in Las Vegas. I think he's probably over at the Venetian or the MGM right now. Who do you know? Who knows what he's up to? He was out there covering Vegas versus Indy or somebody. Stretch, I wanted to get your take, though. This was a rare sort of happy moment for the Sad Sack Cowboys as they improve to 4-9 on the season. Now, we won't have you grade every aspect of this team, but I did want to kind of get your take on one thing right to start with. I mean, you kind of say, and I know it was Brandon Allen, and honestly, he didn't look that bad to me. But I mean, first of all, the three takeaways were enormous. What did you make of that just playmaking defense, a defense that huge fumbles that obviously led to that 17-7 halftime lead?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you can get the ball turned over in those situations, it's only good for you. I'll say this. I thought it was a really good play by Lawrence to, you know, kind of fold back in, knock the ball out. I thought that was a good play. I mean, the other play, you know, the back kind of runs into his guy, and yeah, you can give credit to the defensive front for, you know, stuffing the run up in there. Ultimately, Matt, I'm still really concerned with the amount of yards that this front gives up. I mean, how many times they pretty much stay in a 42 look, because most teams now are, you know, in 11 personnel, which is one tight end, one back. So the Cowboys will substitute nickel in that situation. But it really is, it's unbelievable to me how many yards that they're still giving up from a running perspective. And as I look at this, I do say those were big plays to get the ball, you know, laid on the ground, whether it was their fault or whether it was, you know, Lawrence stripping and ripping it out of there. And obviously they picked up the one for a scoop and score by Alden. So that's, I mean, those are good things, and those are things you certainly want to focus on in a year where you've only got four wins. But I still go back to the fact that Cincinnati moved the football up and down the field on this Cowboy defense, and they are not able to stop the run. They are not a gap sound defense. The scheme is not a good scheme as far as being able to stay sound in the running game. And I, you know, the one thing that's tough on a podcast is that I would love to be able to show one snap where Jalen Smith folds back in there and he takes on the lead block. And the next thing you know, he does a little James Brown turnaround and spins out and like goes out to the outside and leaves a huge crease inside. And it's almost like, I mean, I don't even know what he's looking at. I looked at the play probably 10 times and it was so foreign to anything I'd ever seen that I just kept looking at it. So I want to say, you know what, good for them for getting the turnovers. But, you know, when I start thinking about having to grade it and put a grade on it and say, you know, this front six, they're just not very sound in what they're doing. And I truly believe that there's a real scheme problem here with what they're doing defensively.
Well, and something that that we mentioned earlier in this podcast is Jerry talked about stretch, and I thought, you know, we got to give you all the credit for really calling this out early in the season, that there was some significant issues with the scheme or how this thing was being coached. You were sort of calling that out. And Jerry Jones admitted this week on his radio show that, hey, I regret that. I regret how that thing came together. Now, the one thing, Stretch, I would say is that when you throw a number 33 and a number 28, and you got some people you're bringing off the practice squad, and you just kind of throw them back there, it is a piecemeal type situation. So I think that's been for guys like you, Stretch, that understand intimately the X's and O's of the game, I would say that makes it pretty difficult this year, because you've got to be harsh on the up front. But when you see some of those guys running around in the back, you got to give them a little grace. And I would say, you know, for the most part, now I know some, what's his name, T. Higgins, dropped some passes. A.J. Green, just really, you know, he was a great wide receiver. He has sort of disappeared a little bit in this offense. But I would say some of those kind of no-name, out-of-the-blue people kind of hung in there for you a little bit.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, you got, you know, you don't know who 33 Deontay Burton is, Matt. You just call him by name now. I like that. That's Parcells and you wearing off on you. You just bark at him by number. Or you didn't know who Savion Smith was, or you don't know who Rashad Robinson is. I understand that. You it kind of goes along with how your hairdo's looking right now. It's a little rough, and you're a little rough on brushing up on the depth chart. But hey, here's what I'll say to what you're saying, Matt, is that I do believe that you got a pretty much a workmanlike effort out of those guys. I'm like you. I didn't have. I'm watching the game. I'm like, I felt like an owl. I'm like, who's that? Who's that? Who is that? I mean, I hollered who more in the game than like I've ever hollered. But I, you know, when I look at this schematically, what's going on, Matt, I can just tell you that I don't care what number is playing what position. I'm more concerned about guys playing the assignment in whatever the defense is, whether you're stunting, whether you're stemming, whether you're, you know, whether you're moving one way or the other, whether you're rolling coverage, whether you're bringing a safety down to play the run, or whether you're supposed to set the edge outside as a corner. So, I mean, yes, they did okay in the secondary with a bunch of guys that we have never heard of, and hopefully they can get Brown and Wilson back and you know, at least shore up a secondary that looks a little bit, you know, just guys, they're just rolling guys, like you were saying, out of their practice squad, just rolling guys in the game. But, you know, I'm pointing to one play in the football game that still kind of bothers me. And if not for a holding call on Samaje Perine's run, even with all the turnovers, Matt, even with all that kind of went right for the Cowboys, it would have been a 6-point game going into the fourth quarter. And defensively, when you cannot stop the run, it's something that is carried over week after week after week. And even the times that it felt like, well, okay, maybe they've shored this thing up against a team like Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh can't run the football at all. So it's just, I keep going back to the same thing, and that's schematically that this is a mess, and it's something that they're going to have to address.
Okay. And that it remains to be seen, Stretch, whether that will be Mike Nolan getting fired, a shakeup on the coaching staff in some regards. We shall see, you know, how they address that. On the offensive side of the ball, the Cowboys kind of, for the most part, you know, I thought Andy Dalton, let's start with the quarterback, I thought that was kind of cool. You didn't know what Cincinnati was going to do. There are barely any fans there, so it's kind of hard to know exactly how to handle that. But to introduce, when the Cowboys came running out, Andy Dalton and the Dallas Cowboys, thought that was kind of cool, actually. And then for Dalton, and I know the defense is the real story, or the turnovers were the story of this game. But I did think for the majority of that game, and there was one play that number 30, since you love when I call it the numbers, number 30 for Cincinnati could have had an interception. I remember that one. But for the most part, pretty, as you would say, workmanlike, efficient ball game for Dalton, where it wasn't like he was driving it that far down the field, but made good throws, was efficient, and kept the drives alive on third down. I thought this is the Andy Dalton you wanted.
Yeah, you saw him, and I agree with you, Matt. You saw him make some throws on time. At one time, you know, kind of early in the game, they were 5 of 6 on third down conversions. They were able to convert in some critical situations, keep drives alive. He made some throws that were, you know, timing-wise looked really good. Now, you know, I know you wanted to – he stared down Gallup that time on that dig, and Bates should have picked that ball off. And then he came back when Bates was really sitting on Amari Cooper, and they ran a sluggo, a two-pump, and he was wide open and he missed him. And you saw Dalton kind of come off the field kind of laughing about it, as if to say, hey, I'm sorry I missed you in that situation. So I do think he's got a great grasp of this offense, Matt. I think he understands what to do and where to go. And, you know, it looks like he makes really some good checks. I'm talking about, you know, they're probably double calling some things at the line, and he seems to be able to get the offense into the right position and into the right call for what they want to do. I know the concern is still, well, Zeke's not really being as productive. He had the 25-26 yard run, but he's really not being as productive. And you know, I think I've said this many times, that I don't care what defense it is you're playing, they can make you one-dimensional if they want to. And, you know, all of these teams are pretty much, we've seen it the last 3 weeks, really 4 weeks, and we could go all the way back to when, you know, up until Dak got hurt, teams are basically saying, we are not going to allow Zeke Elliott to beat us. We're not going to allow it to happen. And so they're stacking the line, and they're playing the run really well. And when you've got so many down the line offensive linemen, when you've got so many backups in the game, you know, they're going to get you in one or two bad plays. And you saw that, you know, you saw they'd stun a guy here and somebody get turned loose and it'd be a -2 yard run. Finally, they did toss the ball outside one time to Pollard, who was able to make a good run. I thought that was big in the game. I thought the kickoff return was very big in the game. It's the second time we've seen him kind of change the field position with those kickoff returns. So there were some good things offensively that you can say the Cowboys are, it seems like they're getting better with down the line guys. And if you put your binoculars on, that's going to help you, you know, springboard you into next year, because it's going to allow you to have guys who have had extensive playing time be able to fill out your, you know, to fill out your depth charts and fill out your roster.
all right, since they played this game and they said they were trying to win this game for Dalton, let's give him an A. I mean, I just think that I just be very generous. Give him an A. I think he deserves that. To your point, I thought there was interesting. I listened to McCarthy after the game. I think he loves Pollard. I mean, as a return man, as a running back, I'm not trying to say, oh, he should be the feature back. But in some ways, Pollard, I think this coach is a little maybe more enamored with him than he is with Zeke right now. Your man Schultz, who's kind of stepped in and done some nice things, I like seeing that from the tight end. So all in all, Stretch, I mean, I think you have to say that while I think it, with what Washington's been able to do today, it doesn't look like Cowboys are going to climb back into this thing, but at least a positive outcome after some, you know, a horrid performance last time out.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, you saw Bell, like Bell made a few catches. I mean, you're seeing some things out of this offense that, quite frankly, are going to put them in. They're good enough with what they have offensively to go and score 20 to 24 points these last three games and be in position offensively to give you a chance to win the football games. Are they good enough defensively to go give yourself or put yourself in the position to win? No, they're not. They're still not good defensively. Let's not go out and get a bunch of. I know you like to drink that Little King's cream ale. You're not going to go out and drink a bunch of those till the world looks flat tonight, celebrating a big Cowboy win. But you know, hey, it is a win. It is something that I think Mike McCarthy can point and say, hey, our football team went on the road and won a football game. And I know you and I have talked about this a million times. You can't style point wins, but I'll go ahead and say it. It is about as ugly a win as you could get.
Oh, man. There he is. And I think, you know, cream soda would be more what I would be interested in. Stretch, you can see him every Sunday night. Dale Hansen's sports special on TV, where he shows some of the plays, he displays things, and then you can hear his work each and every Sunday on the Doomsday podcast. Thank you, Stretch.
Hey, Matt, have a great evening, brother. Be good.
All my best. There he goes, Glenn Stretch Smith. And obviously, Ed was in Vegas, so you didn't hear Ed jumping in there with Stretch, but that's okay. Ed gets to talk to Stretch all the time, in fact, and I know.
Usually about 10 o'clock at night he calls.
that's right. I know about those calls because I've had a few of those myself over the years. But good to hear from Stretch, our resident scout and coach, checking in as he always does. Jerry Jones appearing on Jerry and Steven have their shows on the Cowboys flagship 105.3 The Fan. And this is really the only time we get to hear from Jerry. We usually crowd around him after games and get to visit with him. And sadly, because of the COVID outbreak, that has not been the case this year. And so on one of his weekly shows, I believe KC Masterpiece, we call it, KNC, Jerry had some interesting comments this week. We want to share some of that with you. One of those, and then we'll react to it, obviously, is about the situation with the Cowboys scheme, something Stretch has been talking about all year, something we've talked a lot about, Mike Nolan. And this is Jerry talking about one of his biggest regrets about what's going on or what has transpired this season.
Like anybody, you've got a lot of do-overs. I'd like to start again on how we approached our defense this year. I'd like to start that over again. I'm sure everybody else would too.
Where would you start with that?
Well, I'd start right there, right the first day, by the way, unfortunately, but everybody had the same thing. The first day, they were normally when training camp is over. That's where they were. And I would really make sure that any changes we were making, I would want to make sure that we did it in the same way that we didn't make changes on offense. because we didn't think that we had the situation or we had the time to make those changes and it really be effective. We've obviously done some things, we've changed, and we're having a hard time getting those in place to be a good defense.
All right, there he was, obviously, Jerry wanting a do-over. And it's interesting, Jerry, from time to time, will you know, he's pretty candid, and we'll open up about some things. And Ed, we've hinted at this. This was interesting. I don't know what this means for Mike Nolan's job status, but Jerry was in a lot of ways trying to own and, you know, at least saying, hey, this was partly his mistake. It happened on his watch. He allowed it to happen, but basically saying that their decision in a time when they couldn't have OTAs, it had a new coaching staff, and put in a new scheme, and it, obviously it has not worked out at all this season.
Yeah, and it'll, I think, you know, Mike Nolan, whether he deserves it or not, is probably the coach who faces the greatest consequences when the season is over. And, you know, obviously he brought, he provided Mike McCarthy his first job in the NFL when he was a head coach. The San Francisco 49ers hired Mike McCarthy as the offensive coordinator. And so McCarthy has a strong feeling and a strong sense of responsibility as it pertains to Mike Nolan. And if Mike wants Nolan to return for another season, and we don't know if he does or he doesn't, we don't know what that conversation is going to be like. We don't know if Jerry and Steven are open to that possibility. But given how bad the defense has been, it's hard to conceive of a way they can justify, you know, bringing him back as the coordinator, given how poorly this team has played. And it is partly his responsibility, because he'll tell you how nothing happens with the Cowboys. It's, you know, it's not his. It didn't belong to him. And they've been through this before in his 30 years. They've changed systems before. They should know what's required and the time that takes, even under ordinary circumstances. I mean, it wasn't an instantaneous thing when Bill Parcells switched them from a 3-4 back to a 4-3. Remember, they had to draft for it. They had to draft Marcus Spears, and they had to draft DeMarcus Ware, you know, for that to happen and to be successful. So it shouldn't have been a surprise to them that, wow, this is hard to do under any circumstances, and it's really going to be hard to do if we can't have meetings and we can't have a preseason. Now, they probably didn't know they were going to lose all of that. But I do know that during that period of time, Mike Nolan was concerned about the fact that they weren't together and they couldn't build a chemistry, you know, among the players that were going to have the most responsibility. And but when you look out there, there's guys that just don't fit. I mean, I still see DeMarcus Lawrence trying to stand up, rush the passer, and I don't think it works. I think he's a much better player out of a three-point stance. And we know they got rid of, you know, Everson Griffin before the season was over for the same reason. He didn't fit in that system. So they went out and tried. I mean, they brought in Donatari Poe. He didn't work out. All the guys they brought in to fit the system didn't fit the system when they knew what the system was going to be. I'll let Jerry take some of the blame for that. But I'll say this. I'll say I've talked to a lot of people over the course of this season about the defense. I'm talking about former general managers and personnel people who just think the Cowboys were way too hard-headed about this and just tried to force the system on the players, and the results were predictable and they're bad. Historically bad, possibly.
Yeah. It's been awful. And, you know, how much do you give that of the COVID, new coaching staff, all of that? I mean, I do think it has to be, you have to put a tremendous amount on Jerry, and I'm glad you did that. And I think Mike Nolan, as you said, it's just really, really, I know Stretch has, and Stretch doesn't come at this lightly. I mean, he was a coach, so he doesn't want to fire people, but I think we could say that Stretch was identifying glaring issues even in week 2-3 and in talking about the scheme. And so, you know, it would be very, very hard to imagine Mike Nolan surviving as they decide how to move forward. And to your point about Bill Parcells, as a lot of us remember, Parcells, you know, he didn't love the little linebackers, the Datwin, the Coakley, and all those guys. But you know what? He kind of hung in there with it. Yes. Yeah. And that he said, you know what? This is not, obviously he liked the big thumpers and all that kind of thing, but he hung in there with it for a little bit. And he even found a way. I mean, you know, he and Mike Zimmer's philosophies were obviously different, but they found a way to work together. And in fact, Mike Zimmer ended up staying instead of taking the job, the head coaching job at Nebraska a couple of years later. So, it's really, interesting. All of that. Ed, also wanted to hear, Jerry had a some thoughts on a sort of historical deal. The Cowboys, I've heard Al Michaels talk about this. Al Michaels has actually joked about this, how NBC, you know, if the Cowboys were whatever, he would give some horrible record. If they were 0-10, it's still, they just get such huge ratings. Or I think one time he joked that if they could, ratings wise, they literally would just have the Cowboys on every single week. And obviously that's when maybe the Cowboys are having a better season. But the point is the Cowboys, even during trying seasons, usually produce large ratings for all these networks. And they don't want to, you would never want to flex out of one of these games. And if NBC did not flex out of that San Francisco Cowboys game next week, and it's just really, again, that's a shocking thing to see. And then they flexed Ed Werder out, ESPN flexed Ed Werder over to another game. They're sending him out to Arizona.
That's been happening for quite some time.
That's right. But let's get Jerry's response to that. Kind of interesting. Is that embarrassing, Jerry?
We like, as a league, we like the flexibility that being able to move our different media associates into games that have become of particular interest because the teams are playing better or they have particular things that are attractive. So that's a long-winded way of saying flexibility makes a lot of difference. As you know, I'm very involved in our television strategies and committees. And this is to the Cowboys' advantage, and will be, because over the years we have such a huge television audience that the ability to be flex us and move us around can make a lot of difference. I'll be very candid with you. Some of the biggest ratings we've ever had have been on Sunday afternoon.
All right, and there is Jerry Jones weighing in on that. Ed, you have covered this team for a good long while now, even back to those days of yore, those Super Bowl teams of the 90s, the triplets, and all those great times, including the 89 season, of course, with when Jimmy arrived and things looked a lot even bleaker than they do now. I guess they do. I guess it did at the time, but although at least they thought they were maybe going to be able to head in the right direction, although that was pretty brutal at the time. But you hearing about this, what were your thoughts and what did you make of Jerry's response to all this?
Well, listening to Jerry and how he characterizes it, I mean, you talk about not seeing something for what it is. I mean, that's Jerry's statement to me. Like, he thinks it's a good thing and it's not insulting and it's not embarrassing and it's absolutely all of those things. The Cowboys are the biggest powerhouse in all of sports in terms of television ratings for any network across the board. And for them to be leveraged out because of their poor record by in favor of a game featuring the Cleveland Browns and the New York Giants, that's ridiculous. We're talking about they're playing the 49ers, another, you know, former powerhouse during the 90s. But obviously, I was astonished when that happened. I never thought for a second, because the Cowboys have been ratings gold even this year. And so for them to be flexed out by NBC of all people, nobody loves the Cowboys. Nobody waves the Cowboy banner more than NBC. And for the Cowboys to be by NBC's choice jettisoned for the Browns and the Giants, come on, Jerry. That's an insult, and it's very representative of how bad your team has become.
It was amazing. And as one of a guy I was talking to from one of the big networks said something like, my 1994 self would be shocked by something like this occurring. Basically, I mean, it just, you're right. It Jerry doesn't seem to be taking it this way, but it should be a major source of embarrassment to a guy, by the way, who has been huge and instrumental on the whole TV network side of the NFL doing these huge deals.
Yeah. And I thought, you know, that the reality of it would strike Jerry. I thought it would be kind of a slap in the face that got his attention more than anything else that has happened in this dreadful season, that it might like cause Jerry to reflect and put this thing into proper context. But then again, you know, we're looking at a guy who just this week was saying he sees great effort out there on the field. At the very time in his own building, Mike McCarthy is telling these guys, you know, that their effort's unacceptable. They got to finish and yada, yada, yada. You know, I mean, Jerry just will not, at least not publicly, admit the truth that this is a bad football team, because he's the general manager and he keeps, proclaiming himself involved in every football decision that they made for 30 years. So this is his responsibility. He hired the coach. He signed the players for all the money. And now they're, you know, being jettisoned off primetime television because they're so bad.
And to your last point, here is Jerry answering a question that has been asked so many times over the years. And Ed, I'm sure you've, in so many words, you've written about it, you've talked about it. It was asked of him, well, you know, what do you do about the GM?
When you work for yourself, okay, there's no firing him. You got to change him. And he's got to change the direction he's going. And I've worked all my life for myself, but I've had to change directions many times. So I will change. I can change. I'm not saying which way I would change, but I'm capable of changing. I've had to have any success in my life.
And there he is. And again, he's been asked some variation of this question many, many times. I think it's worth asking, though, during a horrific season when he's taken full responsibility and when other GMs are getting thrown overboard. I mean, you know, the GM/head coach in Houston has been long gone. The GM, you know, when they decide to, I mean, you see it all across the league. When you
general manager in Jacksonville, the general
correct.
Manager in Atlanta, all already fired.
Yes.
And yet, I think we talked about it last week when we put into perspective the 393 points they've allowed, that the teams that have allowed more have already either fired their coach or their general manager or will when the season's over is the expectation. And here's Jerry, you know, breaking news. Jerry Jones, the owner, will not fire Jerry Jones, the general manager, again. And he talks about, he talks about how, you know, you wouldn't believe how big a check I would write if that would get the Lombardi Trophy. But what if it's not? What if you're not required to write a check for the trophy? What if you're required to do something else? What if you're required to step down as a general manager and hire a real football expert in that capacity? What if that's required? Well, the answer to that we've seen for 30 years.
Yes.
Jerry has always said and never wavered, and there's no indication he's going to now, based on what we just heard. He is going to be – the reason he bought the team was, yes, he thought he could make a lot of money. But the other thing that came with it was a lifetime appointment to being in charge of football. And that's what Jerry wants.
Yes. And it's laughable when Jerry says something to the effect of, well, I can't fire myself, so I have to change. Okay. All right. Well, he doesn't really have to, because he'll never fire himself. And, oh, by the way, and who knows, you know, how Steven will run it someday, but it will be turned over to a different family member. I mean, I don't think Jerry will ever die, but if it happens, it will be turned over to another family member. So there's no real, and I don't know. I the only hope for Cowboys fans probably is that Steven probably would be a little more pliable or a little more open to doing it a different way if things were going poorly.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I know Bill Parcells and Jimmy Johnson both really respected Steven, and we've seen a lot of examples of Steven, you know, believing in things that are different than what Jerry believes in. We saw him, you know, be the driving force to cut Terrell Owens. We saw him try to convince Jerry unsuccessfully not to pay Deion Sanders the money they paid Deion Sanders. He successfully convinced him to draft Zach Martin and not Johnny Manziel. So Steven does have a different philosophy about football and team building. And quite honestly, as much as I've talked to Steven, it just doesn't seem right to ask him, well, when it's your team, you know, what are you going to do? Are you going to be the general manager, or do you believe you'd hire somebody in that role? So we don't know. But again, as I once told Jerry after he did something very nice for my family, I said to him, you know, in the unlikely event I outlive you, I'm going to tell this story at your funeral. So I don't expect I'm ever going to see that day, because I think Jerry's going to outlive us all.
I'm trying to imagine a scenario where the Jones family ask Ed Werder to get up and say a few words.
They don't have to ask.
All right. That's good stuff. We've covered a lot of ground, and it's going to be an extremely busy off season. Cowboys preparing for another noon start. This is a noon football team now that they've been flexed out of the NBC. Ed, as you prepare to head out on the strip, and I'd kind of like you to go to some of those old places, although I don't know which one of them has been blown up. It used to be like the Nugget or the Golden Nugget and some of those places. I feel like some of those places have been like
Sam's
demolished. Yes, yes. I'd like you to kind of go hang out where they're still like allowed to smoke at the tables and stuff like that.
But where you got to go burn your clothes after you're in there.
Yes, yes, exactly. But Ed, any parting thoughts from you?
Well, yeah, I think a good way to end the show is something that we alluded to a little earlier, and that was Mike McCarthy talking about the value of, you know, winning out these last few games and finishing a bad season on a strong note. And he said he made reference to that to the players this week in a team meeting. He thought that that was one of the foundational building blocks of his time in Green Bay, his first year there, their last four wins, because it was something that they then built upon leading into the off season. And he talked about that and emphasized throughout that whole off season. And then he said in 2007, we were an overtime loss away from being in the Super Bowl. So he definitely believes that the success at the end of one season can catapult a team into its off season in a very productive way that benefits the Mike McCarthy led Cowboys in year two, 2021, when the general manager, Jerry Jones, takes all these high draft picks and turns them into a football team that's capable of doing what his Jimmy Johnson early partnership did and win three Super Bowls in 4 years.
Man, that was, I have to say, I started to reminisce as you were giving that great report. You and I, before that 2007 championship game, were eating with one of Vince Lombardi's grandsons at some famous place in Green Bay. And then I think you went on home, and then I ended up going with the Lombardi grandson to see Vince Lombardi's home, which, you know, and it was snowing that night in Green Bay. So anyway, I started really reminiscing, Ed, as you were telling that, because that was a momentous. I'll never forget. I believe it was Corey Webster, perhaps. Brett Favre drops back, throws it out in the flat. Ball is picked near midfield, and the Packers' dreams end in that 2007 season.
Please do not bring up any of Brett Favre's bad moments in my presence. That's okay. My final thought.
Okay. I'll try not to do that. I like him too. All right. It is the Doomsday Podcast. We've covered a lot of ground. We appreciate it. You can follow us on everywhere you get podcasts: Pandora, Spotify, Apple, all the many Stitcher, all the many places. Thank you to Frito Nation Productions. Shout out to Frito, continuing to make all sorts of steps and in the right direction. And we appreciate Chris Gross doing some great work with production this week. It is the Doomsday Podcast. Good night, everybody.